You are listening to Final Draft on 2SER 107.3. My name is Andrew Popel, and today I'm joined in the studio by Roland Fishman. Now, Roland is a person who simply oozes writing. He's a former journalist. In 1992, he founded the Writers Studio, which is based in Bronte, and for more than 20 years, he's guided budding writers into discovering their words. Roland's also the author of the recently released No Man's Land, chronicling terror in our region and a plot that encompasses both Indonesia and Australia. Now, Roland, I wanted to start with Russell Carter. And arriving today, you've channeled Carter in getting past me into the studio. But look, our protagonist, he's a troubled man, and I'm wondering where he comes from, because it's said that we get the heroes we need, or perhaps the heroes we deserve. Is that who Russell Carter is?
Well, I guess how I actually came to Carter, I wanted to, sort of have a larger-than-life character. And I didn't want him to be a cop or a detective or a secret agent. I wanted him to be something different. I wanted him to be a bit of a loner and an outsider. The premise for the story was about a character who'd lost his faith. So I wanted him to actually have a set of spiritual principles that guided him in life. And that's why I created the Order, which is the Chinese martial arts group that he'd belonged to since he was 16. And those sort of principles were actually what gave his life shape and meaning and sort of quelled that troubled spirit. At the start of the story, he's left the Order, he's had enough, and the only place he finds solace is in the surf, which is sort of like his church. But, in a sense, he's lost when he gets the call to adventure and the story kicks off.
Yeah, he's called back into service, really, and has to confront his past, but also a pretty terrifying present. In creating characters like Carter and like Erina, and then guiding them through a gripping narrative like No Man's Land, is it ever difficult to strike a balance between the character and the story?
Well, I guess that's the whole challenge of fiction, is to have the events of the story put pressure on the character and reveal who they are and force them to dig deep and go on a journey. And particularly with a story like this, if you just have, one action event after another, without being linked to the character, it just becomes one damn thing after another. And, I think what, as a writer and what readers respond to, is characters facing challenges and digging deep and discovering who they really are.
I'd like to think a little bit for a moment about your style, because your writing style is very immediate. There's short, sharp chapters, there's fast-moving, constantly moving action. Is this idiosyncratic to your writing, or is this idiosyncratic to No Man's Land and the particular story?
Look, that's a very good question. I wanted to write this kind of story, and I wanted everything to affect the character. And I found that, I went into too much detail, it lost that immediacy, it lost that sense of urgency, and it was actually the No Man's Land storyline. For me as a writer, it demanded that it be in this form.
And you are listening to 2SER. This is Final Draft, and I've got in the studio Roland Fishman. He's the author of No Man's Land, and we're chatting a little bit about the style, but I also want to think about the subject of No Man's Land, because it engages us in the politics of today, and particularly in the tensions that arise between unflinching fundamentalist viewpoints. And you describe terror attacks, you depict bombings in stark detail. Did you have any trepidation about how you would depict these political and religious perspectives?
Well, one of the things I really didn't want to do was actually portray Muslims as all extremists, all terrorists, all fundamentalists. And so I really went to great pains to show different aspects of Islam. One of the main characters, and I think the real heart of the story comes from Dajoran, who's a Sufi character. One of the Muslim women is also one of the real heroes of the story. And, it's the fundamentalists that create all the jihadist fundamentalists that create all the drama. And how I actually came upon them was because I actually wanted to have, and you need it for this type of thriller, you need an opponent who is driven by values to raise the stakes and make, almost these crimes against humanity believable. And the thing that fascinated me about them is, after reading a book about the Bali bombings and how they all fervently believed they were doing God's will killing innocent people. I just found that a, you know, when I dug deep into it, I actually found it a fascinating and, you know, deeply disturbing concept. And it also sort of dovetailed into Carter needing to re-establish and reconnect with his faith. And I wanted to have that sort of spiritual underpinning, and having the extremists sort of gave me the opportunity to look at, you know, the difference between spirituality and religion, and when, you know, any religion, I believe, when that becomes self-righteous and thinks it's the only way, I find that, you know, quite disturbing.
And I think you've touched on some really important points there in the notion that it's a clash of fundamentalisms and not a particular religion. And yeah, it's very interesting that you talk about Carter having to rediscover his own belief to draw the strength to actually fight back against this. Another area that you broach is torture, and it's really timely because, I mean, we're hearing in the news recently about the CIA having to defend their practices immediately post-September 11. And in a scene, you have Carter torturing a man for information, and he justifies it stating, "There was a little grey area in this case anyway. Woodford's conduct in his business and personal life crossed the bounds of human decency. His actions threatened the lives of Thomas Wyan and potentially countless other innocent people, meaning that Carter could assume the role of judge, juror, and torturer with a clear conscience." Do you feel this is a perspective that most people could understand, or is it really, again, very individual to someone like Carter and his experience and his life?
Well, look, I do think, you know, to do what, you know, someone in Carter's line of work, and I guess also the tradition of that type of character, like, you know, Jack Reacher in the Lee Child novels, they do have a certain ruthlessness, and I think, you know, what they have is a sense of responsibility and compassion for innocent people, and they really, you know, Carter really sees himself as his role in life. He's been trained, you know, to serve those people, and he's, you know, who he is brought up to feel he's got a license to, you know, punish certain people when they cross the line and, you know, disregard the welfare of other people. I'm not arguing that as a moral way to live, but I think for a character like Carter, they've actually got to have that sort of tough, hard-nosed perspective.
And at another point in the book, I do recall you you reflect that Carter, after having to defend himself and an Erina, has to kill someone, and he reflects that every time that happens, every time you take a life, you die a little inside. It's not a perspective that the bulk of people would have any sense of, except for literature and narrative, and it's probably one of the really important functions of literature to be a vehicle of these thoughts that we can't personally experience.
No, that's absolutely right, Andrew. And I do think, you know, that it's almost like the law of karma. When you do something, you do suffer consequences. And, you know, Carter realises this and, you know, sort of accepts it as his lot in life. And I guess that it also explains why at the start of the story he's quite jaded and burnt out, and he doesn't want to do that anymore. But over the course of the story, you know, he realises, you know, it's up to him to step up, you know, and deliver. And I guess the other thing, what I tried to do with Carter is, and I think all good stories do this, but actually show that he makes all his decision based on his values, and that he's actually got this code, and that's, you know, what he makes his decision based on, and not regard, you know, disregarding what other people think or how events may affect him personally. He actually steps up and does the next right thing, basically, which I think is a code that he applies in these extreme circumstances. But it's something, you know, I try to live, that you actually try to do the next right thing, you know, regardless of how circumstances appear.
And I am talking about No Man's Land with its author, Roland Fishman. It's an absolutely fantastic read, and I think for people that approach thrillers and action reads for entertainment, we've given them real cause to ponder some of the issues that are raised and some of the motivations for the protagonists. Roland, I thank you so much for coming in and speaking to me today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Andrew. My pleasure.